The Fan on Demand.
Tennis, anyone?
This is Milos Raonic, and you're listening to Aces on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
And this is indeed Aces on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Good evening, everybody. I'm Roger Lajoie here in our Toronto studios. Tom Tebbit, Tennis Canada, is in New York at the U.S. Open, and this is Aces, our final Aces show of this season. Thank you very much to Tennis Canada and the National Bank for supporting the show and supporting us, and of course our audience who have been just great all season for us. We appreciate your support. We've got Tom's mailbag coming up later in the show. As always, you can reach the show at roger@sportsnet590.ca, roger@sportsnet590.ca. You can find me on Twitter at theRog590, at theRog590. Drop a tweet as well if you like. And you can reach Tom on Twitter at Tom Tebbit. Later in the show, we'll announce the winner of the Wilson Racket, because we've had all the winners throughout the course of the shows we've been doing this year enter into the draw. We'll have that for you. And we'll have Tom's mailbag and Daniel Nestor coming up later in the program. Martin Laurando up first, but Daniel Nestor later. So we got a great show for you. Stick around for it all. Tom is in New York at the site of the U.S. Open. Tom, I guess the big thing in the U.S. Open in New York is you always got one eye on the matches, one eye on the sky, and we're seeing the rain. You've been to a lot of U.S. Opens. There have been a lot of long days in New York, haven't there?
Well, there have been. I mean, the worst thing is I think it's 5 years in a row now. It's rained the last weekend, so they've had to play the final on Monday, which is absolutely incredible. And you know, you go to Vegas and say, hey, the U.S. Open's going to get delayed 5 years in a row and have a Monday final. What would the odds be? So hopefully it's something that'll change this year, but it actually doesn't have to change because now the final is actually scheduled for the Monday. And, of course, I think it's by 2017 or so, maybe even as early as 2016, there could be a roof on Arthur Ashe Stadium. So that could take care of a lot of the problems.
Well, and that'll be good. And, you know, when you look at it too, Tom, I mean, it is part and parcel of it. And the U.S. Open, and, you know, we'll talk more about it later in the show, but the U.S. Open is unique because of it being in New York, because of the boisterous crowds, weather factors into it. It really is a one-of-a-kind event, isn't it?
Well, I just popped up today and watched a little bit of Roger Federer's match, and it really struck me the difference between sitting there and sitting at Wimbledon. At Wimbledon is like you're in church and it's perfectly silent. There is always a hum of conversation in Arthur Ashe Stadium, maybe for the final match or the semifinals or something, but just normal days, people are just yakking all the time, and people are moving around, and it's just a humongously large place, whereas Wimbledon, they have sort of a bit of a roof with a that hangs over the court a little bit, and it's everything's so quiet, and it's totally different. The other thing here is people love to shout out things to the players, like get your second serve in and stuff like that. Like, they'd never thought of that before, but there's always some, you know, wise guys in the crowd that got to say something.
Yeah, it's a great environment for sure. Okay, we got a busy show. We'll get to the mailbag later. And again, it's roger@sportsnet590.ca. So drop an email for Tom, roger@sportsnet590.ca. But tell us about our first guest, Tom.
Well, our first guest is Martin Laurando. He's the Davis Cup captain, and he has to take a lot of kudos these days because Canada is in the semifinal, just two rounds to go to win the Davis Cup, which seems pretty incredible. Canada will be playing in Serbia from the 13th to the 15th of September. And so I spoke to him. He's here in New York checking out everything, the other guys, our guys, everything, getting ready for that great big semifinal in Belgrade on the 13th of September.
A busy man indeed. Here is Tom's conversation with Martin Laurando.
Martin Laurando, welcome to our show.
Thanks, Tom.
You've been the Davis Cup captain for many years now. What do you like most about your job?
Well, it's the the pleasure I get from, I guess, having a team competition format and that our team is playing for the country. It's just so unique to this sport because, when we grow up, we grow to play the game individually. And all of a sudden you get into this team format. And I grew up playing team sports. I played for Town of Mont Royal. I played baseball, soccer, football, hockey, and all those sports as a kid. So I really enjoyed team sports. I played for Pepperdine University as well. So most of my life I've grown into liking team sports. And I went into tennis because it was unique. But I do have a soft side for team events, so I really enjoy that format.
And what's the actual challenge when you're on the court and the players are playing of being the Davis Cup captain?
Well, it's letting the guys, juggling between letting the guys play and finding their, the beauty of it is it's three out of five, so you know, there's a lot of upswings and downswings, and you got to allow the guys to get into their own flow of rhythm and figure out a lot of the stuff on their own. But you know, there's times where, as a team, you know, you have the benefit of having a captain who relies on a lot of bench support and a lot of bench feedback as well. So it's picking those moments when it's time to say something, or it's just time to let it play. So that's I guess that's the challenging side of being a captain.
What's been the highlight so far of you being captain of the Canadian Davis Cup team?
Oh, there's so many. I'm in my 10th year now, and it's whether it was Group One, to stay in Group One, matches where we were just trying to stay alive and not drop down at Group Two, or trying to qualify for the World Group, or staying in the World Group, and I can't pick one really, because you know, you got different teams, different players, and it's all different stakes. But to me, they're all exciting. It's always the same theme. You represent your country. You try to do it proudly and with dignity, and you try to give your best effort. And when that's done, yeah, I'm really pleased.
Canada's had a run of home ties these days, but you've been to Ecuador, I think Colombia, Mexico, all those countries. What would have been the most difficult foreign tie that you've played?
Well, as a player, I thought when we played against Haiti, for instance, that was to go down to Group Two, and we ended up winning in the fifth match, 9-7 in the fifth, I think. Andrew Schneider against Bertrand Madsen, that was crazy. It was really tough conditions. As a captain, my first assignment I found very challenging. It was actually Grant Connell, the captain, but his wife was expecting during that week, and so I was interim captain, and I headed a team down to Mexico, a country in which we had never won. We had so many defeats, I can't even count it. You would know better than me, but something around the 20, 22, or 18 defeats, never won in Mexico. And a lot of our top players were not available for that tie. And we went there and just found a way to win. We had a few players who it was their first Davis Cup experience. College players, for them was a big moment. It was a lot at stake, and it was really a nasty crowd and very tough circumstances. And we managed to pull that one out. That'll stay with me for a long time, that one.
You're at the U.S. Open here preparing, obviously, for the semifinal tie in Belgrade against Serbia in about 2 weeks. What exactly are you doing here to sort of scout things out and get the team ready?
Yeah, I've been spending a lot of time at various tournaments since our last win against Italy, and that was back in April. And the beginning of the year, we had pretty much back-to-back ties, two ties in a couple of months. But between the April tie and September, there's about, almost 6 months there, and it's a long gap not to be with the team. So it was important for me to keep an eye on the guys and keep track of where they're at with their games. Are they on the upswing or downswing, or are they healthy? Are they dealing with injuries that could affect the next tie and stuff? So it was important for me to be at enough events to stay on top of things. And we're down to the final stages now. We're playing in a matter of days. So right now I'm just here for support. I know the guys have to play this tournament and they're focused on this Grand Slam. But in the back of their minds, they know that right around the corner we gotta head to Belgrade. Keeping an eye on the opposition as well, locker room talks and all the things that go with preparing for a tie. So there's a lot going on now. And as well, one thing that I'm looking forward to is just seeing Nestor Pospisil in doubles. They played together in some Davis Cup matches and they played together at the Olympics. So I'm looking forward to their first teaming up at an actual tour stop. And knowing how important the doubles is, as we saw against Italy, 15-13 in the fifth, and that was a pivotal point. So I think it's likely to be like that again in Belgrade, and I'd really love to see them win a few rounds here to get some matches under their belt and try to feel as best they can going into Belgrade.
So what do you know about the conditions are going to be like in Belgrade? We know it's in a huge arena. I think it's more than 20,000 seats, I've heard. As well, it's going to be indoor clay. Do we know anything about exactly what you think things will be like and what the clay will be like?
Well, clay is clay. The good thing for us is that it's indoors. I think there's a big difference between outdoor clay and indoor clay. The conditions, I think, will be slowed down compared to here, for instance. But nonetheless, you know, there won't be any sun or wind or things to slow down the speed of the ball in flight. You know, we expect to be able to play our games as much as best we can. You know, when the guys go to the French Open, I think they feel they can win matches and they can do well. And I think it'll be similar. So it's for sure not our best surface at the moment, but I don't think it's Serbia's as well. And I think it's pretty even down the stretch when we compare both countries and how comfortable everybody is on that surface. Of course, they got Novak. He's the one on everything. But the rest of the team, I think, is pretty even.
They've lost Troitski because he refused to do a blood test and has a suspension. So basically their singles players are Djokovic and Tipsarevic. They don't have nearly as much maneuverability without Troitski. Do you think that could help us?
I mean, for sure. You know, if you eliminate a bit of depth in the opposition, it's always better chances for us. But they still have very tough players in their lineup. They got the number one. They got a guy that was top 10 until not long ago. They got Zimonjić in doubles, who's won a lot of Grand Slams and was on that team when they won the Davis Cup. So we just know that whoever is out there, that they have good, very good depth. They're in the semis. And they're playing at home. So we heard about the crowd from France's experiences and the U.S. experiences down there when they played, and it'll be a lot to handle. So it'll be a difficult tie, but then again, it's the semifinals, and you know, we're going to have to earn our spot in the finals if we want to keep going.
I know you're keeping your cards close to your vest, but I assume Milos obviously is number one in singles. And it would look like it would be Pospisil as a number two doubles player and maybe, obviously, Daniel and Vasek in doubles. Is that what things look like right now?
Well, geez, we've got, like you said, we've got, I think, a bit more depth for this one with Troitski out of the lineup. Frank's been playing really well. He qualified and won around here. He's got a good chance to keep going still. Vasek is top 40. He's had a great year. Our doubles, I really like our chances. I think those guys can beat any team in the world at any time on any surface. Milos is top 10. He's had a great year, even though I think he can still play better. So I'm not going to lock into anything because, you know, against Italy, we had kind of pre-selected Frank to go in, and he got sideline just 48 hours before with a knee injury. So this group has really grown well together. They've really assumed their responsibilities to be ready. Everybody's ready to play at any given time. If it's Friday or if it's Saturday or Sunday, they're going to be prepared. They've played a lot of matches this year, and we'll try to pick the best player for the chances given the lineup and who's feeling the best at the moment.
Well, Marte, thanks for being on the show tonight, and we'd really like you to try to win in Serbia and have a Davis Cup final in Canada.
That's our goal. We've had a great year. Thanks, Tom, for the time. And we've had good wins at home. This one is on the road for sure. We've played a lot at home, so it was a matter of time before we would hit the road again. But we know that if we can get through this one, we play at home again, and that's an extra motivation for us. So we'll keep our fingers crossed. Thanks.
What a sensational story. Team Canada is the Davis Cup, Martin Laurendeau. And yes, if they do win, imagine a Davis Cup final in Canada, how fantastic that would be. Both Tom and George Russick of Sportsnet 590 The Fan are going to be in the Ukraine for that. So we'll have plenty of coverage. We'll have plenty of more tennis coverage as well, because Aces continues in just a moment. And coming up, Daniel Nestor, one of the greatest double players of all time, joins the show. And if you have a question for Tom, drop us an email. Roger@sportsnet590.ca. Roger@sportsnet590.ca. Or tweet at the Rog 590. You're listening to Aces on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. It's Aces, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. I'm Roger Lajoie. Tom Tebbit is in New York, and we are with you here until the top of the hour at 8 o'clock. Tom's mailbag is open, and we've already got some questions coming in, which is great. You folks have been terrific support of Aces throughout the course of the year. This segment is brought to you by Tennis Canada. We thank Tennis Canada for their support all year. Of course, the proud presenters of the Rogers Cup every year. We'll have more Aces for you, of course, next season. And Tom is a regular contributor to all of our shows here at Sportsnet 590. The Fan. We'll be hearing from Tom much throughout the U.S. Open and, of course, the Davis Cup as well. Tom, it has been, and we talked about it, it's been one of our recurring themes here for the longest time. And a good one is the Canadians. And Daniel Nestor, of course, it has been a Canadian icon in tennis. And some people feel he still hasn't really got the kind of credit he deserves. But, boy, you look back at his fabulous career, and it really has been, from the double standpoint, second to none, hasn't it?
Well, really, yeah. And what happened last weekend is he won his 900th title. His 20th year with winning his winning. Title and also his 900th doubles match victory. So it's the numbers are just amazing. And I guess one of the ones that's even more incredible is on September the 4th, he hits good old number 41.
Well, and you know, one thing about it too is the longevity, his athleticism, and everything else he's done. You know, he's really been one of the trailblazers for this group of Canadian players, and we're seeing so many of them at the U.S. Open, and we'll talk a bit more about that after the break. But, you know, Tom, one of the reasons the Canadians are doing so well is they followed in his footsteps.
They did, and the sad thing is he could have been a better singles player than he was. He had a couple of injuries at just the wrong moments, and, you know, he got, I think, to number 56 or 58 in the world as a high singles ranking. Obviously, he's been number one for over 100 weeks in doubles, and he had a terrific Davis Cup result. I remember he beat the former number one, Gustavo Kuerten, in Calgary, and I think the best match I ever saw a Canadian play. That was in five sets. It was just a fantastic performance. So he's been just good at everything, really, in tennis, and he's a real clown on the Davis Cup team. Even though he's the oldest guy, he might be the least mature in some ways, and he keeps everybody very loose. And actually, the good news is he won his doubles match today with Vasek Pospisil, so they're into the second round, and that's good good warm-up practice for the Davis Cup coming up in about a week and a half.
Well, and that will be an epitome, of course, when you get to the Davis Cup. We'll talk more about the Davis Cup, of course, as that gets closer as well, and the U.S. Open after our next segment. But Tom had an opportunity to sit down and talk to an iconic Canadian tennis player. That's the only way to describe him. Here is Tom's conversation with the one and the only Daniel Nestor.
Daniel Nestor, welcome to our show.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Well, here's a bit of a goofy question to start with. What is it that makes you a good doubles player?
Choosing partners. That's my best skill. And also, probably, you know, I played a lot of serve and volley tennis growing up, so those skills are pretty important for doubles. Even though the game has changed a little bit over the years, it's still pretty much one at the net, and that's where I play my best.
Who's the best doubles player that you've ever played against?
Woodbridge on the deuce side, McEnroe on the outside.
And what was so good about both those guys?
It seems like they hold the ball on the racket, and it seems like they can see where you go before they hit the shot, and you're always hitting it in a place that you're not, and holding you in a, you know, putting you in an uncomfortable situation.
What do you miss most about not playing singles anymore?
The attention, probably, because, you know, that's where most of the attention is in tennis, and, you know, but, you know, growing up playing singles, practicing, you know, that was what I focused on for many years, and, you know, it's fun being out there by yourself, and the whole, you know, one-on-one competition is pretty exciting, and, you know, a lot of big matches over the years.
Sticking with a singles theme, this is totally a hypothetical thing, but, Djokovic, Nadal, Murray, Federer, who would be the easiest one for Daniel Nestor to beat when he was in his prime in singles?
The easiest one? There's no easy one. We'd have to play in Calgary in altitude, and I don't know. Maybe Nadal, if the court's too fast, he doesn't have time to set up. But Nadal, maybe 8 years ago.
when his ball was landing a little bit shorter.
You probably like to play him when he's 5 years old as well.
Yeah, then that's hopefully you would think a guaranteed victory.
You've beaten five number one singles player, Edberg, Thomas Muster, Patrick Rafter, Marcelo Rios, and Gustavo Kuerten. Which one of those gave you the greatest satisfaction?
I think that Guga match was great, considering I thought he played a good match that day too, and it was obviously a huge match for Canada at the time. We were trying to get in the world group of Davis Cup, and you know, made it 2-0 that weekend. So that was pretty exciting to be able to beat a top player when he was playing well.
You also technically have a win over Andre Agassi, but he got disqualified, I think, for using an audible obscenity. What exactly, where was that, and how did that actually go down?
If you read his book, that was the year he was on the decline. It happened shortly after that. Obviously, he was under some stress and, you know, not enjoying tennis, not enjoying life. So he was still, you know, ranked pretty high. But shortly after the U.S. Open, he started to, you know, downhill move. And that was Indianapolis 2 weeks before the U.S. Open. And he won the first set 6-1, and I broke him to go up a break in the second. And I guess he wasn't too happy about that. He fired a ball out of the stadium, then he swore at the umpire, and then basically I won the match. So I wasn't the best way to beat a top player, but at the time you were getting bonus points for beating guys in the top 10, so my ranking definitely improved.
So that was a strategic move by Nestor.
Yeah, it was to frustrate him, bring him down to my level, which worked for a little bit. I didn't think I was going to win the match because of it. I wasn't going to win the match for sure, but the funny thing was we played a few years later when he started moving back up in a challenger, and I was seated second and he was seated third. I always wanted to keep this draw sheet, but he still wasn't anywhere near what I'd seen when we'd played a few times before that, when he was, you know, on the top of the game. And it was almost like in this match I felt like even if I win this match it doesn't mean anything, because he's not playing anything close to what he's capable of. And I ended up losing that match, and I didn't even care after, because it wouldn't have meant anything.
You've been on the tour a long time. You've been around the cycle of the Grand Slams more than 20 times, I guess. Just for the average fan, you as a person, as an individual, which Grand Slam would you look forward to the most, maybe outside the actual tennis on the court?
I like Wimbledon the best, because we're in London for the month. There's, you know, we settle in one place, we rent a flat, and my family's able to come. And you know, nowadays, I'm still, you know, keeping a full schedule, and my family's, you know, kids are getting a little bit older, and you know, don't get to spend as much time with them. So I think that makes it the most fun for me. You know, being in London, I like playing on grass, and the convenience of being very close to the courts and also having my family around, this makes it the most fun.
How particular are you about your rackets? You know, weighting the racket, the grip size, the string tension. Are you sort of fanatical about that, or are you a little bit loosey goosey?
No, I'm fanatical, and it's gone to the point where a couple times over the years, Wilson would change cosmetics and just the color of the racket, where they keep the same frame, but just the colors would be different to promote a new line. And, you know, any time that happened, the racket always felt a little bit different. So I was able to hold on to some older rackets, and now I'm switching once a year, whereas most players are switching every few months.
It seems to me that volleying, you're an excellent volleyer, one of the best volleyers on the tour. That it's something like a goal scorer in hockey or someone who can hit home runs in baseball. It's kind of a natural gift. Do you think you can really develop into a volleyer of the quality that you are, or is it something, a gift, sort of a talent that you're born with?
Well, I think what makes my volleys, or what, you know, makes me one of the best volleys, is having good feel. And, you know, I don't think that's something, you know, you can develop. That's something either you have or you don't. The actual volleys, the form, the technique, and, you know, hitting it a certain way is something I've learned over the years, and I've gotten better and better. And, you know, playing a lot of serve volley tennis when I was young obviously helped my first volley. And even in doubles, when I started having problems with my arm and having surgery, my serve kind of went downhill, and that forced me to volley a lot more and hit more volleys than I was accustomed to, and that made me a better volleyer.
Just one more question, sort of historically. All these years in tennis, who would be the player you've enjoyed watching the most? Who do you think is sort of the most aesthetically pleasing player, or the player you just plain like to watch?
Well, I don't think I knew it at the time, but now looking back, especially here this week during the U.S. Open, they're showing a lot of old footage of some of the great matches, and watching Sampras play, I think, you know, you kind of forget how great he was, and you know, maybe the game wasn't as deep and competitive as it is now, but you know, I think, you know, he was able to play an aggressive game style and also, you know, win from the baseline too when he needed to. And nowadays, I think singles tennis has gotten so repetitive as far as the game styles and the long rallies. And, you know, everyone seems to play, other than Federer and Nadal, a lot of the guys seem to play very similar game style, and the rallies all look very different. And very similar, as opposed to, you know, a time where in the 90s, 80s, there was a lot of serve volleys and there was a lot of counter punches, which made for more interesting tennis for me. And so a guy like Sampras, I think, you know, even though he doesn't have the record for the Grand Slams, may still be considered the best of all time.
You're playing with Vasek Pospisil at the U.S. Open, obviously probably playing with him as well in Davis Cup in Serbia in a couple of weeks. What do you enjoy about playing doubles with Vasek?
He's got a great attitude. We're good friends, and you know, we always have gotten along since he was one of the youngsters on the team. He still is, but now obviously he's one of the most important people on our team. And he's just got a positive attitude. He's a good guy to be around. He doesn't take himself too seriously, and you know, he's always had great natural doubles instincts, which makes it fun to play with him on the court. And, you know, that's something I noticed right away. He serves well, he returns well, he basically does everything pretty well. And, you know, if he was ever to just play doubles, I'm sure he'd be one of the top players in the world. But you know, that's not going to happen for a while, being a top singles player.
I think starting on the 13th of September is Davis Cup semifinal against Serbia in what I'm told is Belgrade, which is where you were born. I think you lived there for 4 years before you left. So how do you feel about returning to the old hometown with the Canadian team, and what do you think Canada's chances are?
It's exciting. I mean, you know, 36 years later, I'm back in the city where I was born, even though I went a couple times when I was playing with Zimonjic to the tournament one time and also to practice. And you know, I don't remember much when I was a child. When I did go back in the last few years, you know, it's a nice city, it's an older city, and you know, Europe has, you know, so much culture and you know, nice places to walk around, great food, and so I think the whole team's going to enjoy it. Obviously, our team has a lot of ties to Serbia, and it's going to be an interesting tie for that reason, as well as you know, I think if you look at our two teams now, they're, you know, outside of the fact that they have the best player in the world, you know, it's pretty even on the, as far as on paper, with them missing one of their top players in Troitsky. And you know, they still have a huge advantage in the fact that, you know, you almost think that for sure that Novak's going to win his two matches. So basically, we have to win the three others, and you know, we have no room for error. And you know, we know what we have to do, and everyone has to step up. And you know, but it's not like a, you know, we have no chance. I think we're going in there with the mindset that we can win this. And, you know, we also know that if we win the next match, we're going to host the final. So I think knowing that, I think we think just getting through this one and, you know, finally have a chance to win the Davis Cup.
Well, Daniel, we have to congratulate you on your 81st doubles title last week, and also with 20 years, I believe, is now with the doubles title. Pretty good old man, still playing pretty good tennis.
Yeah, not bad. It's been a tough year, but it was nice to get a win and beat some pretty good teams last week, although it wasn't a huge tournament by any means. It's still good for the confidence, especially going into the U.S. Open. And, you know, I feel like I'm still playing pretty well, and, you know, maybe my ranking doesn't justify it, but, you know, I'd like to see how next year goes and hopefully get my ranking back in the top 10.
Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you, Tom.
Really one of the class guys of Canadian tennis, a long and distinguished career, longevity, great success, a real ambassador for the game. And there's so much talk with U.S. Open going on this week of the great play of all of the Canadian players, and with good reason. But one of the reasons they're there and that they're doing so well is the great Daniel Nestor in conversation with our own Tom Tebbit. So great to hear from him. And thanks again, Daniel, for being on the show. I'm Roger Lejoie. Our studio's in Toronto. Tom Tebbit is in New York at the U.S. Open. After the next update, we will talk to Tom a little bit about the U.S. Open. Tom's mailbag, we got lots of emails. We're going to go through them. Roger@sportsnet590.ca. Roger@sportsnet590.ca. Drop us a question for Tom. We'll read the question for you. And in moments, we'll announce the winner of our grand prize draw of a brand new Wilson tennis racket as well. All that's coming up on Aces with Lejoie and Tebbit, and you're listening to Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
prizes like no other, from a club like no other, the Fan Club. Log on to sportsnet590.ca. Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
You're listening to Aces on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. This final segment of Aces is brought to you by National Bank. We thank them for their support all year of the program as well. Visit them, nbctennis.ca. National Bank and Tennis Canada helping make Aces possible throughout the tennis season. We have lots more tennis coverage, of course, on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. We'll be following the Davis Cup extensively, the rest of the U.S. Open, all major tennis news, and we look forward to being back with you for another series of shows again next year. But you can follow us on Twitter at any time. Tom is at Tom Tebbit, at Tom Tebbit. And you can follow me at the Raj 590, at the Raj 590 anytime. You know the email address because many of you have sent in your emails throughout the course for Tom's mailbag, a regular portion of our program, Roger at sportsnet590.ca. We're going to get into that mailbag in just a few minutes. Roger at sportsnet590.ca. Also, we will announce the winner of our Wilson tennis racket among the draw winners as well. We have just picked the name, and we'll have that for you in just a couple of minutes. But Tom is in New York, and maybe update what's gone on today at the U.S. Open. Tom, I know you're running around doing lots of stuff, but what's the play been like so far today?
Well, I guess we have to talk about the Canadians. Unfortunately, Milos Raonic is the good news. He's up 3-love in his first set against Pablo Andujar on the grandstand court here at the U.S. Open. But the other three Canadians, Eugenie Bouchard, Alexander Wozniak and Frank Dantsevic all bit the hard court today. Bouchard played an excellent match against Angelique Kerber, the number 8 seed. They split the first two sets, and it was a close third set, but Kerber came through 6-3. We knew that Wozniak was overmatched against Azarenka. She's only played, I think, 3 matches in the last year, coming back from a shoulder problem that's bothered her for a long time. She played a good first set with 6-3, and it was 6-1 in the second set, so that was a bit of a toughie. And Frank Dantsevic, as you know, had a lot of problems with his big toe, with a nail and everything like that. And Tommy Robredo is just a good player. Frank was looked like the parts I saw, trying to shorten the points coming in the net quite a bit, but it wasn't quite enough. And Robredo came through 6-4, 6-4, 6-1.
Well, sad day with the losses, but let's concentrate on the positive still, though. And you mentioned Jeannie Bouchard in particular, who it really is impressed recently and goes out with a lot of distinction from this tournament. I think a lot of eyes are going to be on her. It'll be interesting to see, Tom, how she can follow this up in the same way that Milos did in terms of trying to take even that next step, because she's come a long way quickly.
She really has. You know, I mean, she was just the Wimbledon junior champion last year, and not very often would the junior players the next year all of a sudden be having a ranking high enough to get into Grand Slams. But she's been in the last two Grand Slams, and better than that, she's won a round, at least a round in each one of them. So that's pretty impressive. And watching her play today, what struck me is that she plays the right kind of tennis. She's not afraid. She goes for her shot. She doesn't back down to anybody. She's playing the number 9 player in the world today. And, you know, she looked like she believed that she could win, and she did have her chances. So I think she's doing all the right things, and she has a tremendous competitive attitude, and I don't think you can ever underestimate that.
Well, and that's great to see for sure. And Milos, of course, and we'll see what transpires in his match the rest of the night, but on course and a favorable draw for him, and I think he's in a real decent position, and the excitement is there, and hopefully he can build off that Rogers Cup where, you know, he had such a great tournament there, Tom.
Yeah, absolutely. It looks like he has a chance maybe to play his friend Feliciano Lopez from Spain. It's 2-1 up against Bradley Clan of the United States, and Lopez comes through there. That would be a second Spaniard in a row for Milos. And, you know, Lopez is a good player, has played well on hard courts, but Milos would definitely go in as a favorite in that one. And then after that, he might play Richard Gasquet for a spot in the quarterfinals. So it really couldn't have been a much more favorable draw than this for Milos. But you don't want to count your chickens. Andujar is a tough competitor. If you're out of 5 sets, you never know. You can wear a guy down. Maybe Milos goes off a bit, but he's off to an excellent start right now.
Good start so far. We'll keep an eye on, of course, you can get the latest tennis results at our website, sportsnet590.ca. And Tennis Canada, of course, the website, you find Tom Tebbit's great work throughout the course of the year. Before we get to Tom's mailbag, we've had, through the generosity of Tennis Canada and National Bank, our sponsors on the show, been able to give some great prizes out throughout the course of the year. We had all kinds of Rogers Cup tickets throughout the year, and people enjoyed the tournament, of course. And then we entered all of our winners into a draw, and I'm very pleased to announce the winner now of, and Tom, what great prize is this winner going to get?
Roger, it's the Wilson Steam Racket, the ultimate in spin technology.
Boy, you could make a living just doing that and saying that over and over again. Just shelve the writing, Tom. There's no doubt about it. That great prize has been won by Angie Ferlin. Angie, congratulations. You were one of our 10 winners throughout the course of the year. We put your name in a special draw, and your name came out. We've just emailed you. So, Angie, congratulations. Thank you for listening to Aces. Enjoy that great Wilson tennis racket, and thanks for listening into the show on a regular basis. And to all of our winners who won the Rogers Cup tickets, maybe next year. Best of luck to all of you, and thank you for participating in the contest. And again, thanks to all of our great sponsors to make those great prizes so available to us. And Angie, congratulations. Hope you'll enjoy it. Tom will be in touch soon. Okay, we got that mailbag going, Tom. Tons of questions here, so I hope you're ready to put the quiz hat on, get everything here. What do you think?
Well, Roger, I had my Heineken. They have a free Heineken from 6 to 7 here, so I hope it hasn't clouded my mind.
Oh, my goodness. This could not. Maybe it's not going to be as sharp as it usually is.
I like to think that it energizes me.
You got her. I feel the same way. All right, let's go. Tyson emails in, says, hey, guys, do you think the U.S. Open should reconsider spreading out the men's first round over 3 days like it currently does? Because the risk you run is if rain washes out the Wednesday, then you put at least one contender at a disadvantage of in terms of having to play seven matches in less time. Murray was almost a victim of this yesterday, but was fortunately able to get his match in. And Tyson enjoys Aces. Thank you very much. And hopefully you'll have some tennis coverage during the Australian Open, and we will definitely provide that, Tyson. Thank you. Interesting, Tom. There's not much you can do about the rain, but can they do anything about the scheduling to try to at least alleviate the rain a little bit?
Well, it's a very good point that Tyson's making, because it really would have been unfair if Murray had gone, you know, the first few days of the tournament and didn't play at all. But now that they have a Monday final, which is the first year it's been an official Monday final, it's actually been a de facto Monday final for the last 5 years because of rain. I don't think it's that big a deal with, you know, stretching it out over 3 days. And the other thing is, it's a complicated process, but CBS pays most of the money. I think Will for one more year, then it's going over to ESPN, and he who pays the piper calls the tune. And with CBS, they like to have control of the matches on the weekend. By spreading the first round over 3 days, it's a little bit complicated to explain, but basically what I'm going to tell you is that they want Federer and Nadal, that half of the draw for the men, to play on Saturday and on Monday, because they have 3 days this weekend. They're paying the big bucks because Monday is obviously a holiday with Labor Day. So that's part of the reason they like to have 3 days, to have a little flexibility when people play those first 3 days. Then they get them on a cycle so that the halves of the draws that they want on Saturday and on Monday, so they get two pops instead of just one, will line up properly. So it's a complicated answer, but Tyson makes a very good point, and we'll see what happens, because definitely this Monday final thing is only, I think, for this year and next year, and then after that they could reconsider it. So they may have to reconsider the schedule as well.
Yeah,
as Tyson mentions.
Yeah, well, they'll have to do it for sure. I think Monday's going to be the permanent time, to tell you the truth, Tom. We've talked about this before, but I think Monday kind of makes it just more of a signature event for tennis. I know there's a weekend and travel and everything else, but I love the fact it's a Monday final. But we'll see how it goes the next 2 years. And Tyson, thank you. Jermaine emails in at roger@sportsnet590.ca. Says, hey, Roger and Tom, of the group of young rising stars on the women's tour, such as Bouchard, Stevens, Keys, Laura Robson, Jamie Hampton, etc., who do you think has the most upside? Jermaine, thank you. There are a lot of good young tennis players. I know Sloane Stephens is a toast of the U.S., and of course, Jeannie Bouchard's our toast. Who do you like among those young players, Tom?
You know, it's really hard to figure out. I think Stevens maybe has she's a little bit older, too. She's a year or two older. Maybe has the most potential. I know a lot of people are impressed by Bouchard, Robson, obviously, Ashton Talents, and Madison Keys is just she's one of those easy power players. She's just beautiful strokes, hits the ball a ton without that much effort. You don't know exactly how much of a competitive drive she has. So I think I'm going to go with Sloane Stephens and Bouchard. I think Stephens just is a raw talent, just a tremendous athlete. And Bouchard has got the drive and this ambition, which I think you can never underestimate. I think it's a really important part of a player and how well they're going to do, really, really wanting it and not just sort of accepting the fact that maybe they're just going to be a top 10 player.
Well, that's a great point, and I think we've seen it with her, and I love that attitude too. Has that certain edge about her, and I think you do need that to succeed for sure. Charlotte emails in, regular listener. Question is, I'm 26 years old, and I remember growing up watching Peter Berwash call a lot of tennis matches during the Canadian Open. Always thought he had a unique style and was a gem of a color commentator. Where is he these days? You guys know I have seen him call match. I haven't seen him call matches in the Canadian Open for several years. Charlotte, thank you very much. You know anything about Peter Berwash, Tom?
Well, he runs this Peter Berwash International, which supplies tennis pros to resorts and places all over, hotels and things all over the world. As far as I know, he's still doing that. Basically, what happened to him as a commentator for TSN is the rights for the Rogers Cup went over to Sportsnet, and they decided to use different people. So that's what happened to Peter, unfortunately for him. But I think Jimmy Aries is doing a good job, and maybe things haven't dropped off really that much.
And good luck to Peter for sure. And yes, that's the politics of broadcasting TSN to Sportsnet. That's going to affect people for sure. Eric emails in, Roger at Sportsnet59.ca, and says, what type of potential do you think Jack Sock has? In some ways, he reminds me a little of a young Andy Roddick in terms of his skill set as that big serve and big forehand. What about him?
It's funny, Roger. I was walking over to see Wozniak's match about an hour and a half ago, and I was in the crowd, and some guy asked the other guy, said, how good do you think Jack Sock is going to be?
Really?
So I overheard the conversation. I guess I think he's going to be very good. So I sort of have my doubts a little bit, but you know, I don't think he's ever going to be maybe as good as Roddick. I may be underestimating him, but I just what I've seen so far, just a little bit raw. But I mean, he is a big, strong guy. He's got lots of power, and so those guys, you know, you never know when they decide to come good, they can be awfully hard to beat.
All right, T-Bert emails in, and this is more of a comment than a question, he says. I'll preface by saying I'm totally on the same page as Tom when it comes to on-court coaching on the WTA Tour. I'm 100% against it. I feel the sport was meant to be played on an island. You don't have to you should be able to solve a problem for yourself. But that said, I must admit I really enjoyed some of the sound bites we got from the Rogers Cup when Killer Cahill was coming down to coach his charge, Serena. It really added to the viewing experience, in my opinion. T-Bert, thanks. The coaching thing and everything, and we've talked about this, Tom, and a lot of people talk about the traditionalists on one side and the place of a coach going in. But certainly one thing about it is it does add a dramatic flair when you see the interaction between the coach and the player right at courtside.
Well, somebody like Darren Cahill is an excellent tennis mind. And when you can hear him talking to a player, it's really fun. And I speak French, and I remember when Marion Bartoli's father went out, there were some fascinating conversations there. On the other hand, you have Carolyn Wozniacki's father goes out, and he just yaks at her for maybe at 60 seconds, 90 seconds straight, and she doesn't move a muscle in her face and just looks like she's sort of stunned or something. And it's the father sort of picking on the daughter. It's a bad dynamic. So I agree. Some of the conversations would be very fascinating. And on the other hand, a lot of the conversations are in a language a lot of people don't understand. So I guess I'm still against it, but I have to say I'm the same as most people. When it's good viewing, good listening, you really like to hear it because it's kind of a behind-the-scenes look.
Yeah, there are coaches and there are coaches, I guess. Goldeen emails in and says, is it just me, guys? Are the courts playing a tad slower this year at Flushing Meadows? And if so, does it favor any players? Goldeen, thank you. Well, sometimes the slowness may have to do with the weather or the rain, I suppose, Tom, but are they any slower?
I don't think so. I think every talk I've heard, they've been, you know, pretty well the same speed. And, you know, it's a hot, sunny day. They're going to be faster. And, you know, basically they don't want to make them too slow because most of the American players like the faster courts. So I don't think they would disadvantage their players. So I think they're pretty well what they've been. And I've seen a fair number of guys going to the net, you know, serving and volleying and stuff. So I think they're pretty well the same as they've been the past few years.
Mac emails in, listening on fan590.com in Montreal, and he said he watched Jeannie's match today against Kerber, and I'm encouraged by the fact that this was a close match, despite the fact that Jeannie didn't serve particularly well. What aspects of Jeannie's game do you think she needs to work on specifically? She seems to have a good combination of offense and defense and seems to be mentally tough, too. She did seem to get a little tired nearing the business end of the match today, though. Might conditioning be something she might need to work on? Mac, thanks very much. What about Jeannie's over? What are the hit list she needs to get to that next level?
Well, I don't think there's too many. I mean, I really like the way, like I said before, that she goes for a shot. She's not afraid to, you know, she hit four amazing shots when she was down match point. It was really very impressive. Unfortunately, she missed one on the fifth, but that she was able to play that well when her back was to the wall is a good sign. I think that's a good point about the conditioning. I did feel she got a little bit tired today, but she's only 19. And the other thing is, it's not necessarily physical. When you're playing a player as good as Kerber, who's a genuine top 10 player, it's a different kind of pressure you feel, and sometimes that gets you mentally as well. So I think she's just got to keep progressing the way she has been, and it's a normal maturation. And in a year or two, maybe in that situation, she doesn't get quite as tired.
Couple more here before we go. AJ emails in, Roger at Sportsnet590.ca. Who would Tom say are the craftiest and most clever players in the history of the game? At the moment, I really enjoy watching Murray and Radwanska. They both seem to have a very high tennis IQ and are both good at the cat and mouse type points. Good question. Who are some of the smart tennis players out there?
Well, if they're smart, because you can't play that kind of game unless you have the skills. I mean, obviously, Fabio Santoro was a fun player to watch. Way back when, there was a guy named Gene Mayer who was really terrific to watch, even Manuel Arantes a long time ago. Nowadays, I think they're right about Radwanska. And the other one, unfortunately, he lost today, is Bernard Tomic. He has all kinds of variety in his game, can do all kinds of things. Unfortunately, the head isn't that strong these days. But, you know, it's fun to watch those kind of players because if you just have the power, and Murray obviously has a great variety in his game as well, he's fun too. So it's nice to have the sort of the desire to play that well, but you also have to have the skill set to be able to do it, and not everybody does. So you get players maybe like Rafa, although, you know, even he is very good at the net, which is so often not the case with players who are so strong from the baseline. So it's fun to see the variety. That obviously makes the sport much more interesting to watch.
And we got about a minute quickly to do Coy's. Coy, thank you. Enjoyed the season of Aces, and thank you. Two-part question. General consensus is that Novak Djokovic might be the best returner of serve in the history of the game. What makes Novak such a great returner? That's question one. And the flip side, do you think he'll be durable given how he plays the game? What do you think, Tom?
Well, he wears contact, so I don't know. You know, you wonder sometimes about timing the ball. Obviously, I think it's just a gift. It's like, you know, a baseball player being able to hit the ball well. He obviously must have some natural reflexes. As far as that flexibility goes, I have my worries like everybody does. But Kim Clijsters used to do the splits a lot. But Novak, you know, goes right over on his ankles and slides just like he would on clay when he's playing on hard court. So you sort of wonder about that. But I remember back in the day, everybody worried about Bjorn Borg's shoulder because he had these kind of windmill, big wind-up strokes, and they thought his shoulder would fall off. But as far as I know, it hasn't. So you never know for sure exactly how anybody's body is going to react.
Well, Tom, it's been a great season here of Aces. We thank Tennis Canada and National Bank and yourself in particular. You're going to be on a lot with us on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. We hope for another great season next year. Congratulations to our winner again. And we'll be checking in with you throughout the U.S. Open, of course. And your great stuff is always available online at Tennis Canada. Tom, a pleasure as always, my friend. And we will talk very soon.
Roger, couldn't have done it without you.
You're a good man, Tom. Thank you. You could have, but thanks. Tom Tebbit, New York, everybody. I'm Roger Lajoie. And again, folks, thanks very much for your support of Aces all season long here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Thanks to Brett Armstrong, our technical director tonight, and Igor Henriquez, our producer. You can reach both Tom and I on Twitter. I'm at TheRoj590, at TheRoj590. Tom's at Tom Tebbit. We'll have lots of tennis coverage throughout the course of the year, and we'll be back with another season of Aces next season as well. Thanks to everyone for listening, and you've been listening to Aces on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.